Hey, it's the
thing.
Space Game Show.
It's the Space Game Junkie people. Thing. It's the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I am, as always, your host, Brian, and my co-host. I mean, I'm your co-host because we're both hosts. Damn it. Hi, I'm your co-host, Brian. That's your co-host, Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hi. But you're the co-host with the most.
Yes. I guess.
You have the most toast.
We don't have a guest this week. We're taking a little break from that. We want to get up, caught up on, we want to talk about what's been happening in space games. We want to talk about what we've been playing. We haven't done that in a while because usually when we have a guest on, we like focusing on them, you know, or focusing on the topic, you know, but we haven't talked about what we're playing in a while. So, I know I've been trying to avoid playing Star Drive. That's what I've been doing with my time.
You know, that reminds me so much. So like, sad. Well, we had Denny on last week, right?
Yeah. And
we had that conversation about like what was tough things to review, right? And I just remember like whenever I would pull a game to review, and it was just like, this is not really what I want to be playing.
No.
But I have to.
No.
Because I've committed to this. So I don't know. It, just your statement about Star Drive like that, is that kind of where you're at? It's like you want to like the game, but you can't like
it's
the game,
so,
but you had to play it.
It's depressing because it's not like Endless Space. Endless Space is like, after a while, I'm like, oh, so this is kind of soulless from the get-go. I was just excited about a new 4X, you know, but it's really kind of soulless and boring. But Star Drive is full of potential. It's just got all these like great ideas, but it's like not ready to be a full game. It's not ready to be reviewed. It's incomplete. It's buggy. It's missing things. It's just.
So instead of being $30 on Steam, it should have perhaps been in the Steam early access.
It should have been in there.
And then people would not be upset because it's like, no, this is a known alpha.
It should not be a release right now. And that's the thing. But since I don't know who decided to release it, a lot of people are saying Iceberg, which makes sense because Endless Space was also released fairly early, a lot of people feel, and that was also Iceberg. And I think, what was that other one? Legends of Pegasus. That was released early. And
now, Legends of Pegasus, the developer's gone.
They're dead.
Right?
That developer is gone. So there aren't going to be any more patches. But about Star Drive, the good news is on the forum, the developer said it's been a commercial success. Hmm. So that's good because hopefully we'll see the missing puzzle pieces filled in over the next couple months. But every time I even thought about playing it, I just got filled with dread because it's like, oh, I want to like this. It's so sad. It's just so depressing to play it because it's like, oh, this could be good, but it's just, it needs more time in the oven.
Yeah. So what's actually there? Because I looked at the ships look like they're made out of Legos. Like, do you actually assemble individual blocks of the ship?
Yeah. Like each thing could take up a certain amount of boxes, and and there's a specific type of box. Like there's an external box and there's an internal box and there's a box that could be either one or something. And so like power cores fit in the internal boxes, but weapons go in the external boxes, but a small gun takes up one square, but a big flat cannon takes up four, so you can't put it on a fighter, you know, because it needs a cockpit, and you can't, you know. So you can play with that, and that's kind of fun. And it was a little satisfying seeing the ships you built go into battle for the first time. That was kind of fun. Because the AI is aggressive, but at the same time, it feels kind of dumb because, like, it didn't seem to be building the best ships it could, you know? And
yeah.
I put a bunch of time in the beta. I've put maybe 3 hours into the final, and it still feels like the beta. And I'm reading stories about, like, today I just found out that ships do gain experience. I don't know how you would know this because the game doesn't seem to tell you. That's another problem with the game. It doesn't tell you everything. Like, it seems to only tell you certain things with notifications, and it doesn't really tell me how much money I'm making. And, like, the manual isn't that great. And, like, someone described the tutorial as a PowerPoint presentation. So there's an information problem in this game. But I found out by accident that you could refit ships. Like, when you research certain technologies, you can get a certain class of ship. And then if you research a certain other technology, it, like, kind of upgrades from the one to the two. And you can, like, go in your ship screen. You can upgrade from all your Corvettes from whatever one to whatever two. I didn't realize that when you do that, all those ships lose experience, like all their experience, and they kind of start from scratch.
Well, but is there an indicator of experience anyway? Does the ship have like a... Does each one... Is it almost like an RPG character where you open up a character sheet and see how much XP it's got?
I wouldn't know, because when you look at an individual ship, and you can take control of any ship and fly it around, but that seems pointless because combat is so chaotic you can't like target anything, at least in my experience. But like... I remember, like, when you look at a ship, there's, like, three indicators. There's energy, and there's hull, and there's ammo. And those are the three I remember. So I don't remember seeing anything for XP. The only way I know this is because I read it on 2:45, I think. Someone said, oh, shit, you get XP. Really? Oh.
Nice.
Really? Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, I'm just like, I didn't even know I could refit ships until I was looking in the ship screen to make sure things are getting... getting, you know, refueled and rearmed and or whatever. And you know, there's a refit button. Honestly, there's a refit button. I'm like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. Okay, click. You know,
honestly, what sold me the game, and I wondered, we should just put a poll up of people who bought this game. Did they buy it because that character screen that they show, right, where it's actually like the race screen? Because if you remember... in Master of Orion 2, when you would have diplomacy with another race or whatever, they would have like this animated version of the guy from the other race, you know, like the Klakon ambassador is here, and he would be. So they were showing in the promo trailer for the game, they're showing the like, oh, well, here's the space bear guy and here's a bug. And this is a thing that looks like an owl. And it's kind of calling back to Star Control 2, and Master of Orion 2.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh God, it's going to be like that.
It's not. I mean, that's probably my favorite part of the game, which is unusual because usually diplomacy bores me. But in this, it's actually engaging because these guys are chatty. These guys are really talkative. And the dialogue for them is actually funny. Like,
as long as they're sane about what they're doing, right?
Oh, they're totally upfront about what they're doing. Like,
You play a lot of Civilization V, right? So is it like diplomacy in a Civilization game where it's like, we demand this and that, or we will attack you?
Not really. It's more like, we would like a trade agreement. Okay. You know, or we would like, open borders. All right. You know, that's really it.
Yeah.
And then you meet this one guy. It's like, oh, we don't like you. We think we're probably going to attack you eventually. Oh, okay. And then they eventually do. It's like, oh. Right. But
does it do it? Does it do insane things like, let's have a peace treaty, let's be besties, oh, now I attack you the next turn?
It hasn't done that to me yet, but it has been kind of funny. Like, the last session I wrote about, I was declared war by these, like, the Wolfen, I think they're called. And I was not ready for it, but I had a couple of fleets, so I laid waste to a bunch of their ships and two of their planets, and I kept, like, do you guys want peace? They're like, ha-ha, peace is for weaklings or whatever. Okay, and that might be a racial thing, but at the same time, I was like, dude, I just took two of your planets and killed, like, 20 of your ships. You just went from military strength, like, 2 to 5. And the only way you could see that is on the diplomacy screen, which is kind of weird.
So you don't get a feel for tangible outcomes.
You then. Don't. You don't, and also, it's like the game doesn't give you enough information to make it compelling in most cases. Like, someone was complaining, I didn't have this happen, but, or maybe I just didn't notice, but someone was complaining that one of their colony ships was destroyed and they had no idea because there was no like indicator for it. I'm like,
well, that was a problem that I had right from the get go. I mean, I didn't even have but one ship. Well, the three that they give you, right? You have like a colony ship and a scout
and your command ship.
But I had no situational awareness at all. And it's like, do I need hotkeys on these ships so I can jump around and watch what they're doing? You know, do I need to pause the game and try to understand? I didn't understand like what my avenue for situational awareness is, especially since the game happens in real time and it can't be like, there's an event here, come look. You know, so,
and I never figured out how to follow any other ship besides your whatever ship you have direct control of, or your flagship, your command ship. There might
almost like that other game that you like, where you just put it on autopilot.
Well, and here's the thing: it's hard not to compare it to Distant Worlds because there are similarities. But the thing about Distant Worlds is, and I'm probably going to write something about this because it spoiled me, I'll be honest. But even if you set everything to automated except for one ship, which is how I started Distant Worlds, there's still tons of stuff going on. Like, there are pirate attacks. There are space monsters to be found. There are, you know, the civilian population is building, you know, laboratories and, you know, luxury liners. And they're doing their thing. And, but there's always something happening somewhere. With Star Drive, I didn't feel that connection at all. I mean, you can automate stuff, but you just feel like, oh, I'm just twiddling my thumbs. I have nothing to do. And then if you unautomate stuff, it's like, okay, this is not that much more engaging. Like, okay, I found a colonizable planet. Click the colony button. Okay, now I wait. I mean, and there's something not exciting about that. There's something, like, you would think, like, colonizing a new planet. Ooh, it's going to be stuff and things. New planet. It's like, no, it's just a colony button. Oh, it's a rich planet. Yeah. Oh, it's a colony button. It just doesn't feel engaging. And
right. So basically every planet is just an income number.
Every planet is a number of richness and population capacity. And like maybe there's an anomaly that might be like an abandoned ship that you can discover or something, which I didn't really play with too much. Because creating and controlling ground troops is a mess. And you have to like land ground troops to explore these anomalies. Which I didn't really understand until someone told me on the forum. So, yeah, it's just kind of a mess, and it needs more time to cook. It needs more stuff. Like, if there's more content in it and more maybe game modes and more victory conditions, because they're really, besides...
So this game needs more game.
It does. It needs more there. That's how I keep saying it. There's not enough there. And
what is there? It doesn't sound like you can understand what's there.
You kind of can't.
There might be a lot of stuff that you're like, boy, I wish this was here, and it's there. You just don't have any awareness.
Yeah, I kind of skimmed the manual because it was short, and I did. I read the tutorial text, and I watched the little videos, and I still didn't feel like I knew everything that I could do with the game. There's one guy I think is making this game, and I feel for him because there are a lot of moving parts in a 4X. Anything.
Yeah.
Space. Civilization type, you know, historical, whatever. There's a ton of moving parts. And I think it would have made more sense to just keep this going in alpha for a while and focus on one bit at a time. Like, focus on the spaceship control bit and make that fun. And then focus on the diplomacy and make that fun. And then focus on the combat and make that fun. You know, focus on the, you know, but it just feels like there are all these parts that just aren't, like, all these gears.
It sounds like the devs need help.
Yeah, it's like there are all these gears that are missing pieces, so the machine isn't working as well as it could, you know.
Well, that's unfortunate. Hey, another kickstarted thing that's kind of not quite fully cooked yet is Star Command on iOS.
Oh, did you play that?
I own it. I do not regret paying $3 for it, even though, like, I read the reviews, and they were like, it is not the game that you kickstarted. And it's like, okay, but what is there?
Right.
And they're going to continue to work on it, but they had to ship something, right? And this is one of those cases where I would much rather have the bird in hand than the two in the bush.
Okay.
All right. So what it is and what it is not, all right? So it is kind of like The Sims in FTL.
What?
That's how I feel about it. Like, you actually control your crew people in the ship, and you build rooms. Like, you get resources, and the ship has empty rooms in it, and it's like, this can be a weapon room. So I want to build a plasma cannon in this room. Well, you need, like, 5 tokens to do that, you know, and it'll be, like, 1 science and 4 gun token, and then you can build that thing. Those are also the same tokens that I would spend, like, on crew members and that. Like, if I want a red shirt guy, I have to spend, like, a weapon token to get a guy with red shirt skills. Yeah. And you can go to Earth and recruit crew, and you start out with like 3 people on the ship, and then you can build it up, you know, and just get more things in your ship. And that's kind of interesting. And then whenever it's kind of like FTL, where you'll run into another ship and it's like, hey, there's this ship over there, and we're going to take turns shooting at each other, except that it is not turn-based. it continues to go in real time. So you have to like make sure that there's a guy in the weapon room, and some weapons have ammo, so you have to have a guy that actually generates ammo for the thing, and then you can fire the gun. And I think maybe there's some dice rolling based on the crewman's skills of how I'm not entirely sure on that. It's kind of like what you were talking with Star Drive. I think there's things under the hood that I haven't quite discovered the depth of yet. But it feels kind of like The Sims, right? Because it's like these guys with like bars over their head and they're cute little weeble people that run around the ship. So there's a little more personality there than just the overhead view in FTL. So it's this nice isometric view, and that's kind of neat. The touch controls work really well. And I got to the second mission, which is space zombies, right? So the first was like a derelict ship, or not a derelict ship. The first was like these lizard guys that I fought, and they didn't board my ship or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just an exchange of gunfire, kind of tutorially. And then I go to Mars, and there's a derelict spacecraft orbiting Mars, and it's actually zombies that are teleporting aboard my ship, but they're really slow, right? So then the game tries to be XCOM, except that it's not turn-based, it's real-time. But zombies are kind of slow anyway. So then you're like scrolling around the ship, like, oh, I got to find all my red shirt guys and tell them to like run down that hallway to their doom, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I see potential there, you know?
Okay.
And I think what people are crying about is they were saying, well, we were promised that you could leave your ship and go like on away team missions and stuff. They want it more XCOM-y.
Well, it also was promised, apparently it was also supposed to be random universes. You could fly around, you could explore. Apparently it was supposed to be a much larger game than it ended up being, at least right now.
Right. And I think they'll continue to work on it.
I hope
so. You know, and they just needed an injection of probably more cash. And I remember on the initial Kickstarter with this thing, they were talking about how they wildly underestimated the amount of money that they were going to need and what the fees were for Kickstarter and stuff like that. Right. So it was like, oh, we had this great Kickstarter and, oh, you know, it's like being a rock star, right? Like we get to the end of the tour and find out that we owe money. What? You know? So it was kind of like, you know, whatever their finances are, they had to get something out and generate more cash.
They ran another Kickstarter for the PC version of the game, which is the one I kicked to. And I believe that was successful.
Yeah.
So
they said they're going to continue working on the game. There's an Android and a Windows version and a Mac version coming out.
Very good.
It's playable. So, and the AI is kind of stupid.
Are you enjoying it? Like, how much time have you put into it?
I haven't put a lot of time because I'm very casual on iOS stuff.
Mm.
It's basically like if I go, you know, like sit for a while in the living room or whatever, just to get away from the computer, and I'll pick the iPad up and like play a couple games of pinball or something, which by the way, other iPad game, in Zen Pinball, they have the Star Trek, The Next Generation pinball table.
Ooh.
It's $5. It is like a perfect replica of the arcade pinball machine.
Really?
It's beautiful. I do not regret a dime of that $5 that I spent on that. Well, the other thing that's really cool about it is that it has the full rules of the table. So it's got like the strategy guide built in. I didn't realize that there was so much crap going on in this pinball game.
I didn't
it's
know like you there, could have a strategy like, guide for a pinball game.
Yeah, because they explain, like, you know, like, you'll be doing stuff in a pinball game, and it's like, oh, this is lit, you know, and now trigger these things and whatever. And it's like, what the hell's going on? Well, here, there's a ring of lights around the Enterprise that are different missions, and you can control which mission is going, you know, by which light is lit, and you whack the flipper buttons, and it cycles the lights, right? And then once you get the mission lit that you want, you can either, if there's a certain light that's lit, you just hit the launch ball button. It's like a trigger down there, right? So you hit that button, and that'll just start the mission. Otherwise, you light the mission that you want, and then you have to shoot a ball into a ramp that starts a mission, right? Huh. It's like, you know, you shoot the ball into the shuttlecraft thing or whatever, and then it's like, mission is active. And then the table, because it's got like 6 or 8 different cast members have their voices in the table.
Huh.
And it's like, you know, you'll hear like Captain Picard be like, there's Klingons on the starboard bow, you know, and like this mission's active, and then you have a sequence of things to do on the table. I have no idea what these are. So when I was playing it before, like in the arcade, because this thing came out in 93, right? So I've played a good bit of it, but I never had a clue what I was supposed to be doing. You know, it was just like, just don't let the ball fall down the hole in the middle.
That's what I thought the goal of all pinball machines were, but apparently they've made them more complicated.
Yeah, well, this thing is like, it's all skill shot stuff. It's like,
wow.
Oh, so I have to, it's like, we're doing this mission where I have to get the ship up to like warp 8 or whatever. So I have to go up this ramp, you know, like 8 times while this mission's active or whatever the thing is, right? I don't know the missions by heart, but there's like a Borg invasion one, and there's, you know, different things, right? So it's like there's different targets on the table that correspond to different missions. And those are the things that are your goals, is like hit these things while this mission is up.
Oh, wow.
And it increments a counter and that. And you would have no idea. It's like, well, you know, it's not like there's a strategy guide that I can buy for that. But I bought the thing on iOS, and it's built in, and it walks you through. You know, it's like when this mission is up, do these things. And it's like got arrows on the table. It's like these lights here, you know, and so it's kind of great. Wow. I've been having a lot of fun with that. And the thing is, once you get one table that's that good, then it becomes Pokemon.
Yeah, because you gotta have them all, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So a shameful amount of money was spent on pinball tables.
Don't tell me how much.
That was the gateway drug. Well, they give you two tables. Well, like in the Star Trek case, it's $4.99 for the one table. Mm-hmm. But there's other ones that would be like Bride of Pinbot plus Space Shuttle for $3.99.
Mm.
Stuff like that, right? But there's
Trek is more because it's like licensed, so it's a little more.
Right. Yeah. And it's awesome too. And it's a newish table. It's very involved. So they also got greenlit on Steam. So all of this will be coming to Windows very soon.
Well, don't look at me. I've never really been into the whole pinball thing. So I doubt I'll be joining you on that bandwagon.
I think it's perfectly suited for a tablet. On a phone, it's a little bit too small because you can't really see what's going on and you can lose the ball. Those pinball tables are fast and they're very busy, and you really have a hard time keeping track of the ball on a phone.
Right.
I've tried it. But the tablet is perfect for it. It's the bestest of form factors for that. So I would say, I would have it on the tablet. Or they also have they have an interesting thing going on. Apparently they got a little bit bankrupt at one point. Huh. So in order to release content for the Xbox, you have to pay like, I don't know, $10 billion or something. You know, it's like that fee of like, I want to put a patch out. It cost me $10,000 to get through the approval process to put a patch. And that's why Xbox games don't get patched a lot. So there's no resistance to adding content on the PlayStation. So people that bought the pinball game on the PlayStation have a whole bunch of tables that you can't get on the Xbox because they apparently owe debts or something.
Oh, God.
To that system. Yeah, it's the guys over at noquarters.net have covered this in depth. Actually, there is Mackie over there, is the guy that sold me on trying the Star Trek pinball. And then, you know, I hold him fully responsible for all that money that I spent. But he was talking about that they've all got it on the PlayStation because the Xbox situation is so screwy.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's an unfortunate thing about that particular platform. But then it seems like the iOS device gets it first, and then it trickles out to all the other consoles.
Hmm.
So it just seems like the iPad is the place for pinball right now.
Well, that's cool if you like pinball.
Yes.
I have to talk about a game I've been very surprised by, and the review will be going up in a day or two. But I think around the same time Star Drive, quote-unquote, came out, a game called Strike Suit Infinity was released. Now, I had only recently. It's basically the game Strike Suit Zero without the missions. It's a score chasing game. And Strike Suit Zero is a odd amalgamation. It's got interesting combat, but the missions make you want to kill something.
Yes.
Because the objectives are just ridiculous. And I haven't played it since they added checkpoint saves and difficulties and all that stuff.
Yeah, I need to get back to it too. But what I noticed about the new game,
is it kind of the
King Kong of games? It's like, show me the monkey. You know, like, why are we screwing around? Why does it take 2 hours into this movie? Just show me the monkey. Because that was the problem that I had with the original game, was like, I'm here to fly a Gundam robot in space and kick ass, and you guys stuck me in this A-Wing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So where's the robot? Show me the robot. Well, this game, right off the bat, you're in the robot.
Yeah, you're right in the robot, and it has the new targeting features, which I actually kind of like, because you could select, like, the kind of target you want to target. Like, do you want to target torpedoes? Okay. You want to target a Corvette? Sure. You know, it makes targeting a bunch easier. But I'm having so much more fun with the game because it's like, oh, you just want the combat. You don't want to worry about shit. All right, just kill. Go. Kill everything. It's so much more satisfying. It really is more satisfying. I'm liking it more than the original game. I'm liking Infinity more than Strike Suit Zero, to be perfectly honest with you. Because it's like, oh, I don't have to worry about, you know, protecting my frigate from those torpedoes. I mean, you can bring in, like, as reinforcements, you can bring in a frigate to help you out. And, like, it can get hit by torpedoes, but it's not like I'll lose if the frigate gets destroyed, you know? It's like, screw it, you know? I'm going to shoot the torpedoes anyway. And it does have, like, some of the same drawbacks, like no wingman commands, you know, that sort of thing, which I wish it did have. But it's just more fun to just jump in there and just, how high can my score go? Like, how much better can I do? Like, I had forgotten that the strike tree doesn't move much when you get into robot mode. It's kind of like a turret, but I forgot about that. So you have to, like, find the right rhythm on when to use it. And the cool thing about it is there's like an auto-targeting thing. So if you hold down this auto-target button while you're in the strike suit mode, you just twist toward every target and just go boom, boom, kill, boom, boom, kill, boom, boom, kill. And when you're close enough to multiple targets, you can get this big combo. And it's very satisfying.
When you're in strike suit mode, do you just get the guns that are on the arm? Or I was expecting more like a Robotech spray of missiles.
There can be. If you hold down the missile lock button and you move the crosshairs over multiple targets, you can target 6 to 8 targets and then just let loose a flurry of missiles. And it's very satisfying to watch. So yes, you can do that. And there's at least 3 ships in the game too. I've unlocked, you start with the strike suit, but there's another strike suit that you can, there are other strike suits you can unlock. I've unlocked one of them so far, which has like, instead of like the artillery type gun of the original strike suit, it has like a shotgun. Which is kind of fun. And you can unlock different upgrades. You can unlock different weapons. It's just a score chase game, but it just does it right. Like I kind of wish they had released this first to kind of make people excited about the combat, you know.
Mm.
But I was worried it was going to be some just kind of. I'll be honest. I thought it was just going to be like, oh, this is just a cash grab. You know, that's what I thought it was at first. But it's like $7, but if you own Strike Suit Zero, it's like $3 or something. But it's not much money, and it's fun. So
yeah.
I'm going to write a good review of that. So besides that and the truck game, I've been having a good time.
Well, you know, the game that when I first saw Strike Suit Zero, and it finally came back to me while you were talking what this game was. Mm. It was on the PlayStation 1. And it was called Omega Boost. You ever seen it?
Never heard of it.
It is a space robot shooting game.
Really?
And it looks like, I remember having seen it. Gosh, let me send you a video of this. Cause it's just like, while we're talking, I can cut out the dead air while you watch this. Mm-hmm. This is the game that I thought like, oh, Strike Suit Zero is going to be this. But it's not.
Okay.
But anyway, there's that. So let's give this a second.
Omega something.
Yeah, Omega Boost.
Omega Boost. Here we go. Zone 6. Oh, wow. Oh, that looks fun.
Doesn't it?
So it's like a shmup. It's basically a robot shmup from, instead of like top down, it's like a third person robot shmup. But wow, that's violent.
Isn't it?
I like
it. Fast, and there's all that Robotech crazy missile stuff going everywhere.
This is more fluid than Strike Suit Zero, because like I said, when you're in the strike suit, you kind of come to a stop. You can move a little bit, but you're nowhere near as nimble as a fighter. But in this game, you're like flying around all over the place, and you're moving up, and you're all zippity doing loops and stuff. Wow, this looks great.
Doesn't it?
I'm going to see if there's a copy of this for on the cheap. No, I want that.
It's just like, this is like every mecha in space cartoon.
I want that. I love mecha stuff. If there were enough games, I'd probably start a mecha website, but there aren't enough games. It's $3 used on Amazon.
We'll have to put that in next month's budget.
Really? Let me see how much it is on eBay. But
do you still have a PS1, or do you have a PS2 that can play PS1 stuff?
PS3s actually can play PS1 games, which is ridiculous. But
is that like the original PS3 that can do it?
No. The original PS3 can play PS1 and PS2 games, but the newer PS3s, like the Slim, like I have, can only play PS1 games.
I had no idea they could do
that. It's crazy. Yeah, I know. So, but I do also have a PS2. So, this is exciting. Omega.
Yeah, it's been bugging me. Like, ever since Strike Suit Zero came out, I'm like, man, there was this game back in, you know, the 90s, I guess it was.
Yeah.
That this game totally reminds me of, but I can't think of the name of it. And then while you were talking about Strike Suit Zero, it was like, oh yeah, Omega Boost. And well, there you have it. So.
Wow.
Are you still watching this? Like, he's fighting some kind of space centipede thing?
Oh, I stopped. I didn't want to spend too much time
on
like, it.
It's some places it becomes like R-type in space.
Ooh.
Yeah, which R-type is probably my favorite horizontal scrolling Japanese shooter.
Wow.
So, yeah.
All right.
Anyway,
let's talk some news. The big news, even though it might not apply to my site, but everyone's talking about it, so I thought we would. EA has become like the official Star Wars maker people. I'm not sure how I feel about this. Some people are excited about it because they think they think BioWare is going to be doing more Star Wars games, and they want to see the DICE folks make a like Battlefront 3, basically.
Did you see the leaked Battlefront?
I have not.
Footage?
I have not had time.
Oh, it looked good.
Oh, that's a shame.
Good.
I played the first and second game in single player, and I had a good time with those. And
yeah.
I played some Republic Commando, and that was fun too. So it's like, there's a market for this, people. Why didn't you do this?
Speaking of Republic Commando, I finally bought it. They had that Steam sale last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I've got it for like $1.50.
Did you play it?
Yes. The only thing that I find kind of obnoxious about it, because it plays really well.
Yeah.
I don't know what they did that makes it run under Windows 8, but they actually tweaked something because I couldn't even get it to run under 7 before.
Oh, wow.
I think the deal was it was actually not so much the OS, but the fact that it was 64-bit.
Oh.
It hated. So, and I run into that on some of the old games that I try to fire up. It's like, oh, 64-bit Windows, barf. So, yeah. But hopefully as virtualization technology and the ability to 3D accelerate a virtual machine improves, I will probably be able to play some of the older games in like an XP VM or something like that, which is, I think, what I'm going to resort to for Starfleet Command, because we were talking about firing up Orion Pirates and playing, and I cannot get the installer to run. Uh-huh. And ditto with Klingon Academy. I can't make it work.
Uh-huh.
So this, the installer never comes up. It launches in the background, and I never see a window pop up.
So it doesn't sound like we'll be able to have a multiplayer thing of
Not until I get XP in a VM, and then I think we're gonna have an old games party once again.
Yeah, we're gonna do that topic tonight, but I don't think either of us had time to prepare.
Well, you know, that's actually, yeah, because you were talking about doing that, and that's kind of as an aside, because I didn't really have that in mind whenever I said that, but that actually might be a good topic to bring up in the thing is in getting old games to run.
Yeah,
you have to do like DOSBox or Windows compatibility tweaks, or just run the damn thing in a virtual machine. So I will explore that with some of the things that I couldn't get to run. So, speaking of old games, though, Sub War.
Ah, folks, I don't know if you know this, but the folks who made the Independence War Games, the iWar Games, as they were known in Europe, Particle Systems, who sadly I don't think exist anymore. I think either their first game, or maybe their second, probably their first, was this submarine combat sim. Think of a space sim, but underwater, called Subwar 2050. It came out in like 93, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty old.
Yeah, it was around the same time. I think it like used a similar engine that Pacific Air War used. I think it was a similar engine to that.
Yeah.
At least it looks similar. But the guys who made the Independence War games made this amazing underwater combat game, which is kind of just like a space sim, but underwater. So you have things like thermal layers to hide in, and you could like hide from sonar and stuff like that. And it just came on Good Old Games for $6. And I am going to get it eventually. I don't feel the rush to get it because I actually have the disc of that one.
Yeah.
But
But the thing is, you can fire it up in DOSBox and get it working. There's this is another reason to have that evening where we talk about getting old games to work.
Mm.
I had a lot of problems getting the joystick to work in it.
Oh, really?
Just to get it to come up at all was easy. But the joystick would always like head right up to the upper right corner of the screen.
Mm.
And stick there, and then you couldn't do anything with it, no matter how much you calibrated it. And I found out through screwing around with the joystick options in the INI file that there is a couple of things you had to turn off, and then it was good. So,
INI files.
Oh, yes. But thank God,
only the bravest.
We never have to make a boot floppy anymore to try to free up. Some
I do kind of miss those days. I will tell you, I do miss the tweaking of the config sys on a boot floppy just to get 638 of K. 638. Oh,
high mem is the best.
Oh, high mem was the shit. Yes. Oh, you can get 638K and run just about anything.
And I never could figure out, it was like, well, this game requires this much EMS memory. And then after you got really proficient at setting your system up for that, it's like, no, these games need XMS memory.
Oh, no, that's right. I forgot about that.
Oh, God. I never could. Honestly, it was not until Good Old Games put out the Ultima 7 collection that I ever could. I bought Ultima 7 when it was new.
Oh, really?
I could never find a boot floppy that actually worked and gave me enough RAM that I could play the game that I bought. So it was not until Good Old Games put it out that I could actually play the thing that I bought so long ago. So.
Oh, but yeah, folks, if you want to see some of Particle Systems' early work, go to goodoldgog.com, Subwar 2050. I played it years ago, loved the crap out of it. I've owned it on disc for years. It's a really great game if you could deal with the, oh my God, that game's 20 years old. Oh my God, oh wow. It just hit me. That game is 20 years old.
It looks it too.
It does. But it's still kind of amazing that I think graphics like that kind of hold up, like those kind of 2D graphics. Like,
well, a thing in that particular game is it's a submarine game and it's really dark underwater.
So it hides a lot of flaws. Yeah.
Right, because you don't see any further than your headlights. And if you've ever watched, the James Cameron thing where they went down and explored around the Titanic,
yes,
and they had the three submarines.
Oh,
I forget what it was called.
It's dark as crap down there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but it was what an awesome documentary. But it's like these three submarines, and you can see, like, you don't see the guy unless you're 20 feet away. You know? So the way that it was in this game is they only rendered textures out about, you know, 20 feet in front of you, because such was the level of technology at the time.
Yeah.
But everything was wireframe out from that. And it's kind of like, well, your sonar constructs a virtual presentation of the landscape that's in front of you,
right,
that isn't illuminated by your headlights.
No, it was a wireframe. Okay, it makes wireframe thing, which is awesome.
Yeah. And it just makes perfect sense. It's legit. So that game being lo-fi like that, even if they remade it today, I don't think, I don't think they would actually remake it in the, unfortunately, we would get like Archimedean Dynasty or something like that.
Hey, that was a great game. Archimedean Dynasty was a great, you're talking Aquanox, which are the sequels to those. And they weren't that great, but Archimedean Dynasty was much more serious. That was a much better game. That was a great game. Yeah,
I meant Psychonauts, yeah.
It's a shame those never took off like the space games did, because you could do a lot with that kind of stuff.
Well, it's an interesting environment.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Space games are about getting rid of the environment, so you don't have to worry about crashing into the ground. You can just chase that dot on the radar like we talked about.
Exactly.
But in a submarine game, that was one of the things about the terrain in this game. You want to make sure you don't hit the ocean floor, right? And then you have to think about buoyancy of your ship.
Exactly.
So you can only rise and fall so fast, but you can flood and blow your ballast tanks.
Right. Oh, and there's pressure on your ship all the time. So
yeah, and then they actually render like the thermal layer in the water, and the way that works with submarines is different thermal layers where you'll have currents under the water, and this is legit. Like, submarines today do this all the time.
Yeah.
You hide above or below a thermal layer because the sonar will reflect off
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
It's almost like a barrier. So if you duck below the thermal and then you scout around with your sonar and then you pop back above it, you know, so there's a stealth mechanic that's there. And that's kind of neat.
Oh, yeah.
I do wish that they would explore that in a more action-y game, because you get things like Sub-Command, which is really great, that Sonalists did.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Those kind of games.
Those are wonderful, but they're not really accessible.
Yeah, and it's more like a capital ship sim, not a fighter sim.
Yeah, those are much more detailed. I mean, they're fabulous, but like those are like much, much more not the seat of your pants that we're talking about with Sub-War 2050 or Archimedean Dynasty, where you have this little fighter craft.
You know what they need to do is they need to bring back the SeaQuest license.
Hmm.
SeaQuest DSV.
I love the first season of that show.
Yeah.
The first season.
Well, that's how I remember at the beginning of it. It was very much like Privateer. You know, these guys in fighter subs are chasing this guy that's in kind of a piratey merchant miner ship or whatever, and he's like, you know, like, quick, close the door. I got to crash the ship into the hangar to get it. Yeah, kind of action-y thing. Interesting, though. So it's too bad they never did anything with that property. I wonder who owns it and if anybody would even care if they did anything with it or not.
It says Interplay on Little Games, so I guess they own it, even though it was Microprose originally. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Huh.
What else is going on in the news? Oh, the Dominion Kickstarter has relaunched. This Kickstarter sadly failed several months ago, so...
Yeah, and it's not that Dominion either.
No, it's not the Dominion from Deep Space Nine. This is a open space... You can't call it open world, can you? Open space fighting, mining, trading sim, which looks great. And it just launched this past Friday, and it's looking for £100,000, or euros. Are those euros or pounds?
No.
I think those are pounds.
That's pounds.
Yeah, those are pounds.
Early L thing.
And it's about 3,000 so far with 26 days left. So, folks, if you can, if it looks...
You need to hustle.
Yeah, if it looks good to you, head over there because I want this game made. I back the original Kickstarter. I'm backing this one.
It looked kind of interesting. I glanced at it, but I can't really tell it from an X game.
Yeah,
it looks like an X Beyond the Frontier kind of thing.
Well, that's kind of... I don't know about that, but maybe. But hopefully it's a little more accessible. I still have to start playing that. That's next on my list is Albion Prelude. Damn it. fine. But an exciting bit of news is there's this game coming out called Rodina. I think that's how you say it. It's being made by Brendan something. I forget his name. His name's Brendan. I'll link to the site in the show notes. But he worked for Bethesda as a designer or programmer. He worked for Bethesda on both Morrowind and Oblivion. And now he's making a space game with procedurally generated planets and a universe. And you can land on the planets, you can get out, you know, you can do stuff on the planets, get back in your ship and fly off. All in like first person mode. At least that's what I'm seeing so far. It looks super exciting because I've wanted a game like that forever. I mean, one of my dream games is like, imagine like Skyrim, but like that's a planet and you could like get a ship and fly off that planet and like fly to another planet that's like Skyrim and do quests and stuff around there and then fly off that planet and do stuff in space and land on another planet. How awesome would that be?
So this brings up something that I was thinking about before.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we ought to talk about this sometime, but you brought it up, so we're doing it now.
Okay.
okay, George Lucas has this thing in Star Wars about planets being a single, like, homogeneous environment, right? Mm. So Hoth is a ball of ice, and Tatooine is a ball of sand, and Coruscant is a ball of urban...
City. It's a ball of city. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there is only one climate on any given planet. Mm. And most spacey games, if they let you land on the planet, like kind of the BioWare games, right? You land and it's like, oh, there's one starport on this whole planet.
Yeah. And we go there. A lot of them do it like that. Like Evercron Mercenary, you can land on a planet, but yeah, it's like that. It's like one city.
Yeah. And it's like, well, if you look at our planet and how much variety of cultures and things to do and stuff like that, you could never get done modeling a single planet. So you have to generalize it.
Yeah, you have to abstract it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that I would rather see a game where instead of, oh, there's 1,000 planets to explore all the same, instead of that.
You'd rather see like one solar system with very detailed different planets.
Yeah. Or like, let's say 3 different planets that happen to be connected by convenient warp gates.
Mm.
So it's like, well, I'm only going to travel to these 3 places. That's the scope of the game because this happens to be the only 3 settled colonies.
Yeah.
And we use a technology that limits, you know, I'm not flying straight line anywhere I want to go. You know, I'm dependent upon the warp gate between these 3 very specific destinations. And then you can flesh those out quite a bit.
Yeah, with space stations give them, and
asteroid
fields. And, yeah, totally.
And that way, it's you can have different factions and things like that and a little bit of a complicated backstory, not just so much like, well, there's these 100 planets over here that are the space bug empire. You know, and we have to fight them. You can fight them in any of 100, you know, whatever. Just bring it a little closer to home. Make it kind of more interesting. And because if you're going to let me land on a planet, make it convincing.
Well, there's a game that I think it's not as detailed as you're talking about, but it's in the same vein. It's called Salvation Prophecy. And
never heard.
Yeah, it's an indie game. It came out late last year. I still have to review it, but it has both space and ground combat. And it takes place only within a small amount of planets, and you can fight like these battles on the ground, and then you can find the space. So that might be something you might want to look into.
The guys that we were talking to with the whole Crown event.
Yeah.
What their game was? It was Escaping Titan.
Yes. Yeah.
Thing. That sounds like it's got potential for being maybe a couple of fleshed out environments.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad. And make the space between the planets meaningful, like with space stations and asteroids you can mine or land on or hidden pirate bases and stuff like that. I wouldn't mind that at all. Like, even if you gave me like 3 planets that are modeled to the extent of Skyrim, you know, in their detail, I'd never leave the house. I would never leave the house. That would be awesome. So this Rodina game that we're talking about is I think trying to be, you know, bigger than that, but there haven't been like a ton of updates. So I got an email from the dev going, oh, thank you for, you know, keeping track of my game. I'm like, duh. Of course I'm gonna keep track of your game. But there's a trailer you guys should watch. It's linked to on my site. I'll link to it in the show notes that shows combat both in space and like flying above a planet, which is just awesome. You know, I would love that kind of combat where you're in and out. You're in the Atmo. You're in Atmo. You're out of Atmo. You're in Atmo.
Mm.
You fly between canyons and like lose your opponents and stuff. That's exciting. I guess another piece of news is EVE Online turned to 10 I think yesterday. Of the day before. I think yesterday was...
Oh, that's kind of neat.
I think yesterday was EVE Online's 10th birthday.
Did they give everybody a free Titan to celebrate?
I don't think so. Sadly,
probably not.
Probably not. But yeah. So that's exciting. I mean, what other... I don't know if there are a lot of other... There aren't a lot of other MMOs that have been around that long. Definitely no space MMOs have been around that long. Jumpgate was around for about 10 years before it died, which is sad.
What was that space MMO that kind of looked interesting? It was Black something. Blacklight, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, it was like they ran in beta for a while and then closed it down.
Oh, so Dark Space?
Yeah, maybe it was Dark Space.
I might still be around. I don't know. No, it's maybe. Toast. Maybe.
Yeah.
Because there are a few. Oh, God. Dark Space, I'm thinking of. There was Earth and Beyond, which is great. Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, I just wish that something like a modern Jump Gate would come out and stick.
Oh, that's probably what Star Citizen is going for, which is awesome. Thank God. Something needs to.
Yeah. Also, in the non-space MMO zone, Neverwinter came out. Well, they're in beta, but everybody comes out in beta now, right? It's like Google led the charge on that. It's how many years was Gmail in production that it was still beta?
Four or five?
Yeah, exactly. So, and MechWarrior Online is still, you know, if we're doing a drinking game, you have to drink every time I mention MechWarrior
Online. Did they fix that? Last time we talked about that, you were pissed because they broke it.
They have fixed those bugs but introduced new bugs.
Yay!
So, yay! Yeah, I got shot one time today, it bypassed all my armor and blew my engine out, and I was just like, what? Yeah, it was like with an autocannon 2. It's like it does 2 points of damage. I've got 48 points of armor.
Come on.
And it killed me in one shot. And I was like, yeah. They need to actually, well, I can understand why they haven't, but they need to actually add a after action summary to the thing where they would show kind of like World of Tanks. It's like, here's every shot that got fired and where it
they
landed.
They don't have one of those for a game like that?
I'm sure that they do. They don't expose it to the players because the players would whine incessantly, right? Because it's like, oh wait, you know, you'd get like all the number counters.
Dude, Eve totally has that. Eve has a kill board where you could see like who killed you and how they killed you and when they killed you and where they killed you. You know, it's totally public.
Yeah, well, MechWarrior is still a work in progress.
Yeah,
I
know, but they should totally add that. They totally need to add that.
But, Cryptic released Neverwinter, and it's pretty fun.
Really?
Yeah, and it costs nothing to get your toe dipped into that water. The one thing that's interesting about it is I have not explored it yet, but I see where there are people who are quest givers that are handing out quests that were apparently created by other players.
Oh.
So you can be like, here's this quest that I thought up and pin it up, and this is the rewards that it gives out or whatever. So I have not delved into any of how that works yet, but that's supposed to be like the big attracting factor of the game is that they built this thing, and then it's just like, we're going to let the community fill it in.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. It would be really cool, like, if we can actually design our own dungeons and stuff rather than it just being like putting a bounty on the head of NPCs or something that are always there anyway. I have no idea how it works, but I just saw that it was there and it was listing quests and who made the quest. And it's like, oh, well, that's kind of neat. So I have to get back to that. But it's like a third person Diablo kind of combat.
I'll give it maybe I'll give it a shot. I mean, you know, I it's not like I don't have enough on my plate right now.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, the combat plays out. It's more akin to the action RPG combat, like in a planet side kind of game where it's like I'm a wizard, but my fireball goes where the cursor is.
Oh,
it's
that's
not
cool.
Like I pick a target and then I hit the number 3 key.
I hate that about MMOs I've played. Even Eve is just like, okay, orbit at this distance, fire this cannon, fire this missile. Whoop.
Yeah, that's why I don't like Eve.
Whoop-de-doo. I know a lot of people who do. I'm not knocking it for the people who love it, but to me, it's just like, I need skill-based bitches.
Yep. So, and that's what's neat here is it's a fast game and pretty light, and it actually uses the D&D 4th edition rules. And whenever, I don't know if you've read the 4th edition D&D rules,
we talked about this last week. I've never played any.
Oh, yeah. Well, they read like it's a MMO. Like, oh my God, you got your Warcraft in my monster manual, you know? So they would have like powers, like you can use this power at will, like every turn you can do this, or this is once per encounter. So, you know, it's basically like your special moves recycle at a certain rate.
Hmm.
Well, that totally works in the context of a computer game because now it's like, well, every 30 seconds you get to use this.
Oh.
So it's, I don't think they had to really alter the rules much at all. It was tailor-made to be dumped right into a computer game.
Oh. So,
kind of neat. Yeah, but everybody that plays tabletop D&D that I know hates 4th edition, and they're like, yeah, we're playing like 3.5 for life, yo. But anyway, enough about non-spacey things.
Well, no, we can talk about Euro Truck Simulator for a bit because it's on sale again. And people, seriously, it doesn't sound exciting. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's a great game. I'm not even kidding. I'll be honest. I've been putting off buying a gamepad for my, like, people have been telling me for years to buy the 360 gamepad for the PC because apparently it's awesome. And, you know, I was like, gamepad's for the PS3. I don't need it for the computer. I have a joystick. I have a keyboard. What do I need a gamepad for? This game has pushed me to buy a gamepad. I bought it.
Hey,
today.
By the way, keep an eye. Oh, you bought it already?
I did. I budgeted it out.
Did you catch it on sale? Because I saw where Amazon was selling 360 gamepads for like $25.
Oh, no. This is like, no, I got it for 30-ish.
Oh. That's cool.
Yeah, no, it's
you didn't get too taken over.
No, I've been eyeing it for a while, but after playing this game, I tried playing it with a joystick. The joystick's just too sensitive. Oh god. But
don't talk about the joystick. It's very sensitive.
Very sensitive.
Did you see what I did there?
I saw it. Yeah, that was good.
That's it. That's what people tune in for right there. That's the show.
Boom, that's the money shot.
Bam.
That's the money right there.
I got to go to instantrimshot.com.
Boom goes the dynamite. But no, I bought Euro Truck Simulator has convinced me to buy a gamepad, which is actually probably a good investment because more space games are supporting gamepads like Strike Suit and such. So why not have one? And, you know, more games are like coming out that require one. So why not? So, yeah, Euro Truck Simulator was the game that convinced me to buy a gamepad. How crazy is that? It's so good. I wish they would make a space version of it. And somebody would say, oh, what about the X game? No, this is actually good. This is actually compelling. This is actually fun.
If they would just make Space Truckers, it could be the exact same gameplay.
You know what? I think there was a Space Trucker game in the 90s, but it was a full motion video thing, and it had Ned Beatty in it. I'm not even making this up. And it was just like Space.
I remember it.
It was like Space Trucker or something. I never played it. I just remember the box. I'm like, oh, Ned Beatty, the guy from Superman or Deliverance. That's really all I know him from.
Oh, there's a board game called Galaxy Trucker.
Yeah,
as
I've
well.
Heard of that. And I'm kind of getting a little more interested in the board gaming thing because I got one for Christmas and I haven't played it yet. But then when I saw there's a board game of the Infinite Space, I was like, oh, that might be a good time. And there are all these space board games. It's crazy. I don't know if I have time or money or space in this one-bedroom apartment to get more stuff because you can't buy digital board games. Well, I guess maybe you could. No, you probably can't.
Well, you can on the iPad.
Yeah.
I bought Talisman.
Isn't there a game called Eclipse that's for the iPad that just came out? It's supposed to be a spacey board game.
Let me look.
It just came out that people are talking about. I need an iPad at some point. People, just buy me one. No, I'm kidding. Obviously. Kind of.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that looks neat.
Yeah, people were talking about it. People were saying it's a really good boardy, spacey thing.
That's kind of neat. So I hope it's got AI, you know, like for people like me that have no friends.
Yeah.
All my friends are on the internet, damn it. So it's like, have you tried to assemble 4 to 6 players around the kitchen table?
I have like run pen and paper role playing campaigns, yes. But it is
so difficult in the modern age.
It's not
easy
at all.
To get 6 people around a table.
I mean, they have like ways you can kind of do it on a computer that I've seen, but like the only way to do something like that is to have the same people all around the same computer. I mean, the same table.
Yeah. I bought the deluxe edition of Cosmic Encounter.
What's Cosmic Encounter?
Beautiful game. Oh, there's a PC version of it online, Cosmic Encounter.
Never heard of it.
Com or something. It's a very, very fun board game. I played it at a convention back in like 1984 or something.
Wow.
It's, yeah. And it's basically a diplomacy and screw your buddies kind of game.
Oh, those are always right? good. Those are always a good.
Yeah. So it's like everybody has a planet and you have some ships and then you make alliances about, okay, well, you and me and Joe, and we're going to attack Lisa's planet, you know, and right. And then there's, your different aliens have, it's kind of a Master of Orion-y kind of thing where it's like certain races, you don't have colony management or anything. It's just basically like getting wiped out or what, but it's like you'll declare attacks and then the other people will declare defense and you resolve combat out. Right. So it's more of a diplomacy game than any kind of a territory on a map or whatever. But the different races have different powers is where I'm making my my Master of Orion comparison, right? So it'll be like, oh, well, you're these guys, and you get to do these special things. And you can pick these powers, and you don't necessarily have to reveal them until you screw somebody with it.
Right.
So, you know, so that's kind of neat. And they did an online version, which I need to check out. I played a game of it, but it's been like a couple of years ago. But that's the thing is like I've got these board games in my closet, and every time I open the closet, I get a little sad because it's just like, damn, I can't get anybody around the kitchen
really
table to
is,
play
it
this.
It really
stuff.
Is difficult. You have to plan weeks. In advance, like eventually, the last time I was running a campaign, I had to be like, okay, we're meeting like the third Sunday of every month. That's when we're, because damn you people, just put it on your calendar, third Sunday of every month or something like that. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, and you don't want to invite strangers like into your home, and you don't want to play a role playing game in like Starbucks. That's just kind of.
Oh my God, that's it. That's the secret. I can go. There's these guys, and they're always hanging out in front of Home Depot. So if I go down there...
I just spit all over my microphone.
Yeah.
It's expensive, Mike.
I don't... Yeah.
That's not what they're there for, Jim. That's not,
they're there to build a deck.
They're there to help you move out of your house.
Or to help you build
a deck. If you have such things. There's not many decks in Los Angeles, I don't think. Because there's not many yards.
That's true. But anyway, yeah. So, okay, foiled again. Dang. Is there any other news? Do you have anything?
Let's see. Lots of reviews of Star Drive coming basically saying what I've been saying. There's an interesting Starflight type game coming out called Void of Darkness. He's been putting out lots of videos of his interesting looking game. If you're in France, Paris, France, on May 24th, you can join the guys who did Endless Space for a Beer Together event. That sounds kind of fun.
That's kind
of
neat.
Yeah. God.
But I wonder if you have to choose three cards before you go into the bar.
Oh my God! Don't even.
You have to choose your drinks before you go in.
God.
that would be great.
And that's the big stuff. And there's all these tons of little things, like all these little tidbits about the new Drox Operative expansion that Steven's working on. And there's a new game that we just heard about called Icarus Ascends, which was talked about on our forum, which looks kind of interesting, kind of tower defense-y, kind of big blowy-uppy, which looks fun. There's a video for that. That's really it. In the news, I mean, not any big news except for the EA thing. I mean,
yeah,
that's the thing. I mean, we get news in like fits and spurts in the space. There's lots of little bits and pieces here and there, but not a lot of big stuff. I mean, a few, like last week, the Limit Theory prototype was released, which if you're lucky enough to have kicked $75 to that particular Kickstarter, you get it. I want it so badly, but I didn't have that kind of money.
Speaking of space games that are tower defense.
Yeah.
This is old news, isn't it? Never mind.
No,
it dawned on me. I saw it the other day and I was like, oh. Have you ever played Unstoppable Gorg?
You know what? I haven't. I know of it, but I haven't. I have not.
Apparently Rovio bought those dudes.
Rovio?
Yeah, the Angry Birds guys.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, they apparently bought the game studio that made Unstoppable Gorg.
What? What?
Which is apparently, yeah, and this is from like March of 2012.
Really?
I saw an article on Eurogamer. I didn't realize that it was, well, it was new to me, right? So it happened just yesterday.
Hey, news is news, but yeah, I have not played that one. I hear it's not bad. I just can't
get into it. It's fun. Is it? I like it.
I can't get into tower defense games. I just can't.
As a rule, I hate tower defense games.
Really?
Yeah, it's just like, it's kind of overdone. It's that genre that, it works really easily on a tablet because you can't really do a good RTS game. And there's some people that will dispute me on that because they're, you know, fans or whatever. But it is much easier with a tap-type interface to do a tower defense game. And it's almost like turn-based, right? Because you build the thing and then you set it in motion and just watch, right?
Mm.
And maybe, like, tweak some things, you know, at the appropriate timing or whatever. But Unstoppable Gorg is very interesting because, first off, I have a thing for bad, like, 50s sci-fi movies.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It definitely has that aesthetic, yes.
Yeah, speaking of, Ray Harryhausen passed away today.
Yes,
so, moment of silence
depressing.
For Ray. But it's, you have a planet and there's orbit rings around or your space station, right? And there's orbit rings around the space station. And then there's so many objects that you can build in each orbital ring. And then there's a mothership and little flying saucers come out of the mothership and orbit around your space station getting closer until they start shooting at it when they get close enough. So your towers are actually satellites that you put out in the path of the UFOs. And then as they snake toward your station. But it's kind of tower defense, but it's not like a terrain thing. It's just, you know, the orbit that these things are going to approach from. And whenever you adjust the placement of your guns, you actually, like, twist the entire orbit around. So you can say, like, oh, I'm going to spin the third ring. I'm going to just grab it and spin it to line it up to deal with this other stuff.
Well, it's,
so
it's funny.
It's really cool. There's got to be a demo, and it's cheap on Steam.
No, I own it. I must have gotten it in a bundle or something because I own it. That's the funny thing.
There you go.
That's the funny thing about Steam is like, oh yeah, I have that.
it's like Hoarders, right?
Oh yeah.
It's too bad. It's too bad they don't have like American Pickers for video games.
Oh, I'd be terrible.
They could dig through my Steam shed and find things I don't even own.
Oh, I have
or don't know that.
Okay,
I own.
Moment of truth. How many games do you have on Steam right now?
Oh my God!
Come on,
hold on. I have to pull it up.
I'm looking at 400.
It takes a while to load.
I'm looking at 494.
Oh, I think you got me beat. Let's see. All games.
I don't know if that – because I kind of use it as my launcher. I kind of use it like I install – like if I install a game, I'll add it here, you know, even if it's not a Steam game. So I don't know if it's counting that.
I have 233 legit Steam games. Nothing additionally added. But a lot of it is small stuff. And I am a sale hunter.
Oh,
like
the
last time – oh, gosh, it was last fall. They had the big Christmas sale where things were going for ridiculously cheap.
Oh.
And I still, my rule is I buy nothing that's over $20 and I will generally wait until it gets under 10 and hopefully under 5. Like at $4.99, it's my, if I have any interest at all, $4.99 gets it. But God, I dumped like $400. Huh. It was kind of sad. But see, the deal is, cut that in half was my actual thing. But because of my wife, everything costs me double because if it's a multiplayer game, which most of what I do is invest in multiplayer stuff because it's like, well, this looks kind of fun and she might be into it. And it's $5. I'll get two, you know, like Dead Island.
Right.
It's like she doesn't really dig zombies, but that might be kind of fun. So I'll get two. All
right.
So.
Yeah. So I own way too many games on this thing.
Yeah, it's if I quit buying games right now, I probably could still spend the rest of my life playing these games and never play everything.
Yeah, no, I see. I don't finish games. I'll like, oh, that might be interesting. I'll play that for like 10 minutes. Okay, I'm done. I got what I need. I got what I wanted out of that. Yeah, this.
Well, and the thing because I primarily play multiplayer stuff.
Yeah,
is I'll dabble in the single player a little bit.
Yeah.
but I want to play with somebody, you know, like she and I will play something or whatever. And in that case, I never see the campaign, or I'll see like the first quarter of it, but I never actually experience the story. Like people have told me things that go on in modern warfare, you know, and I'm like, oh, really? There's a single player?
See, I'm the opposite. I'm the opposite. I'm all about the single player.
Well, I think it would be interesting, like Steam collects all those metrics, right, about who plays how many minutes of what and what your progress was in the game. Yeah. And they put that in like, oh, well, we have achievements and things like that. But really what it is a way of making it acceptable that we track every mouse click in the game.
Hmm.
You know, it's like everything you do comes back to our servers, you know, like the government is spying on you. But, you know, but in order to not have you put your tinfoil hat on, it's like, oh, no, it's for achievements.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're addictive.
So, yeah. So, I don't know. I know people, like, on the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
God, I know a guy that went, like, over 100,000 Xbox gamer points, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh. But what he does is he'll go out and rent a game. And it's just like, oh, yeah, I need, you know, like 50 cent blood on the sand. I'll rent that because, you know, like the first 1,000 points of achievements or whatever are super easy to get. So,
right.
You know, I'll rent a game over, you know, from Redbox overnight and like unlock a bunch of crap and then take it back just to jack my points up.
Hmm.
And it's like, really? So, I don't know. You can become a point hoarder.
I believe it. But, you know, no, I'm a game hoarder. I actually have an Excel spreadsheet of all the games I own. With all the
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's bad. It's
but at least we don't have like physical shelves of boxes anymore.
No, I got rid of those years ago. All my games are now in cases. In like folders, like flip folders.
Yeah. Well, I find like more and more is I don't even really keep the physical games around so much because all of the compatibility has fallen off the back end with those things.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like I'm giving them away to people.
Oh, no.
You have a crappy old computer? Here, have this. Oh, it'll run this.
Well, if you're giving any more away. But no, I keep all my discs. There's some games you can't get on any digital distribution. Like, I don't know, Avengers. Remember Avengers from Interactive Magic? Crazy-ass Russian game? Yeah.
Nope.
I love that game. And you can't buy it on digital distribution. So I still have the disc. I still have a lot of discs. I like all the Jane's games, for example.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can't get those anywhere, you know, digital, sadly.
Yeah, but see, what I've found is I tend to rip those to ISOs, and then I park them on a hard drive, and then the physical disc doesn't matter to me anymore.
But what if that hard drive crashes, or what if that hard drive gets destroyed?
Well, you'd have to burn the house down because I've got them like three different drives.
Oh, that's...
So it's like as having been a sysadmin for as many years as I have, it's like if the data is worth far more than the physical media that it's on.
Mm.
So if it costs me $200 to have a 3 terabyte hard drive, it's worth 3 of those to preserve 3 terabytes of data. So I will have everything on 3 different drives.
That's
just in case. Because I don't know if you've ever encountered this with a USB hard drive. You hook it up, and then it's just like, oh, this disk is unformatted. And it's like, wait, I've been using it. You know, what do you mean? And the partition table just went, boop, gone. I don't know if that's a particular fun thing that Windows does. Or
knock on wood, I've never had that happen yet.
I've never had it happen on a Mac, and I've never had it happen in Linux, but Windows does it to me about once every 6 months. I'll dock a drive in my Black X dock, and it'll just be like, hey, this needs to be formatted. So that's why I've learned just like keep 3, because the file could go bad on one. The other one, you might just dump the partition table. It's in a third place. So
let's wrap this up, because we've been talking a while. It's late on my end. But Jim, thank you. That was a fun talk. It's always fun to just sometimes sit back, relax, and just shoot the shit. And that's totally what this podcast was. That was a lot of fun. But, folks, thank you for listening. As always, please, leave comments either in the comments below or in the forum. And, oh, I keep forgetting to say this, but we have an email that you can email us if you have questions or suggestions about the show. It's hail, you know, like hailing frequencies. It's hail. At spacegamejunkie.com. I just changed it because it was something else and it wasn't very catchy. But it's hail, H-A-I-L, at spacegamejunkie.com if you have any questions or comments, unless you don't feel like feeling them in the putting them in the comments. But thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Jim, for co-hosting, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
And someday I will find the stop.